This aging, semi-educated white man is now prepared to introduce our next speaker. And that is John Ahern. John is the Executive Director Emeritus and former Director of the Ethics Program at the Sigma Xi Center. He's a lecturer in public policy, an adjunct professor in civil and environmental engineering at Duke University, and an adjunct scholar at Resources for the Future, which makes me wonder what he does in his spare time. John's professional interests, as many of you know, in the areas of reactor safety, energy issues, resource allocation, and public policy management. Among his credentials are having served as the Commissioner and Chairman of the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission. He's also had stints at the White House Energy Office in the Department of Energy and the Department of Defense, and he currently chairs the National Research Council Board on Radioactive Waste Management and is a member of the National Academy of Engineering. Today he's going to talk about LIP and Yucca Mountain, preferring to refer to these two cases as a success and as a failure. I presume we understand which belongs to which. And what are the lessons for the future? Please welcome John Ahern.
I have a few opening comments. When I was called to talk here, I was really honored because of Frank, but I was also surprised. And at the end of my talk, many of you may share that surprise. Frank mentioned he was thinking back to Jack Kennedy and the Nobel laureates. But I'm reminded here a story about a comedian in Los Angeles inviting a guest to a gathering of comedians. They were sitting in this large room having dinner, and then someone said 11, and everybody laughed. A little bit, not much, but a little bit. Someone else said 12, another group laughed. And the guest said, what's going on? He said, well, we know all these jokes, and so all we do is give the number, and people know what it is. And then someone said 49, and the room erupted into laughter. And the guest said, what was that? Oh, we haven't heard that one before. So I'm hoping that you have to say a few things you haven't heard before. Which also reminds me of Nevada, from the legislator at one of the committee hearings. When it was her turn, she said, everything has been said, but not by me. What we're really talking about in many cases are topics that are related to what the environmental community and people said many years ago. NIMBY, we all know what that is, not in my backyard. LULU, locally unwanted land uses. And NIMTO, not in my term of office. And there's a Nevada legislature that certainly represents that. Many here lived the history I will mention. I'm going to refer in many cases to National Academy studies, some of which I was involved in and others I have referred to. First, starting with WIP. Selection of the present WIP site came after rejection of the previous candidate site, which was an abandoned salt mine near Lyons, Kansas. And I just learned today that Frank was involved in looking at that, actually living in Lyons for a little while. Investigated from the mid-60s to the early 70s, the Kansas site was abandoned because of the large number of boreholes penetrating the formation and also some salt dissolution issues. Renewed efforts at a nationwide site selection characterization process were begun. The AEC wanted it to be in the Permian Basin, and Oak Ridge said, well, you can have another site in Kansas or perhaps in New Mexico. From the potash mining, a lot was known about the New Mexico area. The New Mexico Governor King invited the AEC to come to New Mexico and look for a repository site. And there was strong support from political and business leaders in Carlsbad and Eddy County, not unrelated to the fact that jobs were needed as the potash company had closed. Exploratory drilling began in 1974 for a possible deep geological true waste disposal site in salt beds in New Mexico. The first location selected was rejected as a permanent site, principally because of irregular subsurface geology. The present site was recommended in 75, and in 76, the main waste isolation pilot plant was given to the project, and the first exploratory hole was drilled. In 79, the WIP site was authorized after preliminary testing, and I quote the words of the authorization, which may relate to a suggestion later. Research and development facility for demonstrating safe disposal of radioactive waste from defense activities and programs. Construction of WIP, together with studies of its suitability as a true repository, proceeded through the 1980s. There were a few bumps in the road. As was mentioned earlier, DOE under Secretary John Deutsch in 78 suggested using the site as a spent nuclear fuel demonstration facility. That energized some opposition, and the 1975 WIP Authorization Act blocked that idea. Eventually, the then DOE Secretary and former Governor Edwards and the New Mexico Governor negotiated an agreement on the state's role for this facility. And Bob Neal is sitting here. He led the EEG, the Environmental Evaluation Group, that was a federally funded state organization. In 1999, November, our honoree in the National Academy of Science Workshop and Disposition suggested revisiting the exclusion of spent nuclear fuel from WIP. That would lead to the agent provocateur. As far as I can recall, the idea dropped. I have that alone. WIP began operation in March of 99. A few factoids. WIP represents the first application of performance assessment applied to a repository. And the radioactivity per unit volume of WIP true waste is only about a tenth of a percent of that for spent nuclear fuel. And as of December of last year, over 6,000 shipments had been received, over 96,000 containers were put underground containing 52,000 plus cubic meters of waste. And in January of last year, the first remote handled fuel was received. So yes, I do believe WIP can be viewed as a success. Now you come on. We've heard a lot about the history, so I won't go too long into it. In 57, the Academy did recommend evaluation of salt sites. In 1966, the National Academy did report to the AC Director of Reactor Development and Technology. Now, it was addressing low and intermediate waste, and that was their term. It includes guidelines that the Academy has used for decades for radioactive waste. Safety is a primary concern, taking precedence over costs. And radioactive waste, if disposed of underground, should be isolated as permanently as possible from contact with living organisms. In 69, the AEC proposed a retrievable surface storage facility. And as was mentioned, in 74, the AEC was split into the Directorate Commission and the Energy Research and Development Administration, IRDA, and IRDA dropped the retrievable surface idea. In 1982, the Nuclear Waste Policy Act formed the process of site examination. In 83, DOE identified nine sites, as Ward mentioned. In 84, did a draft environmental assessment for the nine. In 86, the final environmental assessment for five. In 86, three were designated so-called first round. There's going to be a second round. DOE identified 12 sites in seven states on the East Coast and in the Midwest, and then indefinitely deferred the second round. It's still deferred. The Waste Policy Amendment Act in 87 selected Yucca Mountain, which energized Nevada. And although Ward pointed out that Nevada had once invited a repository, the reaction of that Waste Policy Act, that amendment selecting Yucca Mountain did not get much support in Nevada. In 1990, rethinking high-level radioactive waste disposal. This was a report by the Academy's Board on Radioactive Waste Management, which Frank was chairing, said there's a strong worldwide consensus. The best, safest, long-term option for dealing with high-level waste is geological isolation. But preparing quantitative predictions so far into the future stretches the limit of our understanding of geology, groundwater chemistry movement, and their interactions with the in-place material. The resulting estimates are uncertain to some degree, and they will remain uncertain no matter how much additional information is gathered. You agree, Frank? The committee recommended, and this is a theme that I'll hit several times, publicly negotiated pre-licensing agreements with the USNRC on how to deal with the high levels of uncertainty arising from numerical predictions of repository performance. Kenry did another study on the disposition of high-level waste and spent nuclear fuel in 2001. Now, this was an international committee. Many academy committees do have members from other countries, but this particular committee was selected to look internationally. We had representatives in addition, members in addition from the U.S., members from Switzerland, Sweden, Germany, Russia, France, and Japan. And then we had an advisory committee with members from Belgium, Spain, UK, Sweden, Germany, Japan, France, and Switzerland. So it really was an international consensus report. The way the Academy reports are done, you reach consensus. So this broad spectrum of representatives from these countries did agree. After four decades of study, geological disposal remains the only scientifically and technically credible long-term solution available to meet the need for safety without reliance on active management. Now, when we wrote the report, I think many of us thought the U.S. program was on a path, and this was not going to be related directly to the U.S. program. But if the U.S. has to rethink the siting, here are some points that we made. For both scientific and societal reasons, national programs should proceed in a phased or stepwise manner, supported by dialogue and analysis. I'll note that Tom Isaacs, another participant here, many years ago recommended a phased, stepwise approach to introducing waste into Yucca Mountain, but I think that was viewed by some people in Nevada as the camel's nose under the tent. Efforts are being promoted in many countries to establish a collaborative decision process that is open, transparent, and broadly participatory, addresses explicitly the values and ethical considerations that are implicit in alternative technical and policy choices, seeks more voluntary consent from communities that will host waste facilities, empowers a wider range of interested and affected members of the public, undertakes with interested scientists and segments of the public a full discussion of the need for safe waste disposal and the costs and risks of various alternatives. We recommended in the report that national programs should direct their efforts beyond technical project development and implement processes that involve the public in decisions on how to assure safety and security. Now, I'll note that in September 06, however, there was another attempt, the Domenici's Yucca Mountain bill, to shortcut the process, but that bill went nowhere. Now, there are other process recommendations which will be striking the same point that I'm trying to stress. In 89, the Academy put out a report improving risk communication. And after all, one of the obviously a major issue in siting these facilities is communicating the risk. Many people, including some scientists, decision makers, and members of the public, have unrealistic expectations about what can be accomplished by risk communication. For example, it is mistaken to expect that improved risk communication to always reduce conflict and smooth risk management. Risk management decisions that benefit some citizens can harm others. And what we find many times is what happens if you have good explanation, that makes the people who are really in opposition say, oh, I didn't realize it was that bad. In addition, people do not share common interests and values, so better understanding may not lead to consensus about controversial issues. But even though good risk communication cannot always be expected to improve the situation, poor risk communication will almost always make it worse. We stress in the report focusing on values, trying to get clear that government officials should try to understand that the values that they may be pushing in their proposal differ from the values of the public, and they ought to understand that and understand the public's values. People do not agree about which harms are most worth avoiding or which benefits are most worth seeking. They want to argue for the protection of what they most value. And then finally, in 96, we get another Academy report with a title germane to what we're talking about, Understanding Risk, Informing Decisions in a Democratic Society. Although the studies at Yucca Mountain have convinced many members of the technical community that the site is potentially acceptable, most Nevada citizens and many others remain unconvinced. Some of the objections probably result from disagreement about what decision needs to be made. This is now quoting from the report. A major gap in the argument to use Yucca Mountain site is the lack of a convincing case that a permanent repository is needed now for environmental, safety, or health reasons. Now, we're somewhat related to that. There has been a push, it was mentioned, for getting some off-site interim facilities to store spent nuclear fuel, as though that was really needed. The American Physical Society did a study consolidated interim storage of commercial spent nuclear fuel and published it in the beginning of 07. Approximately 54,000 tons of spent nuclear fuel were stored at operating nuclear power plants and several decommissioned power plants throughout the country. Sounds like a lot. There are no substantive safety or security reasons for establishing consolidated interim storage. There is sufficient space in all operating nuclear reactors to store all spent nuclear fuel in pools and an existing or additional dry cask will be discharged even with plant license extensions. Going back to the Kenley report, a message that I hope the government will pay attention to. Risk characterization is a result of an analytic, deliberative process. It's going back and forth between the public and the government in cycles. Its success depends critically on systematic analysis that is appropriate to the problem, responds to the needs of the interested and affected parties, and treats uncertainties of importance to the decision problem in a comprehensive way. The analytic deliberative process must have an appropriately diverse participation or representation of the spectrum of interested and affected parties, of decision makers, and of specialists in risk analysis at each step. So what are some lessons? One of the Academy WIP reports said the success of WIP probably can be attributed to the following factors. The WIP site proved to be a very suitable geologic host to a true repository, a good site selection process. From its beginning, the WIP project had strong programmatic and scientific leadership. There was and continues to be public support for WIP in communities near the repository and in New Mexico generally. The WIP project has been subjected to intense external scientific and technical reviews during most of its history. Bob Neal's EPG and the Academy had, for many years, a standing committee looking at it. Defense, true, has a relatively low radioactive content and produces relatively little heat. And the engineered bearing system was modified to respond to technical considerations identified during the performance assessment studies. So in general on WIP, DOE worked with the state. There was national security involved, defense waste. It worked with the communities. Many of you, like me, who go from Albuquerque to Los Alamos, are delighted at the Santa Fe bypass that was put in as a result of the Santa Fe community who want the route for true waste from Los Alamos to the WIP to go anywhere near Santa Fe. And then there was Sandia Laboratory provided oversight. On Yucca Mountain, did not work with the state, maybe thanks to Bennett Johnson. It's commercial fuel practically entirely. And we'll mention that perhaps a program could be put in place to say it's only going to be the defense waste that's going to go into Yucca Mountain. There's a lot of defense waste scheduled to go there. And perhaps that could be an argument to let Yucca Mountain go forward and prove it can work. Now that then we would have to go and look for another repository site. The process was wrong. It might not have worked if it had been right. The stress that I had pointed out in most of his comments are the need to work with the public. It makes a slow process, but we've seen many times in this country and other countries that that's what works. It has in Finland. Tom Isaacs ran a process for getting the public involved in the selection and support of the site in Finland. It may work in Sweden. I will note that France is often described in the nuclear world as being, they do it right. They have a lot of reactors, they reprocess fuel. What do they do with the reprocessed waste? They're storing it. Why? Because they can't cite it. Several years ago, I was in a meeting with several people involved in trying to go through siting issues. And a DOE representative was describing the problems that DOE had with Yucca Mountain. And the French delegate said, wait a minute, we don't have a problem. When they break into your office, throw your computers out into the street, destroy your documents, turn your car over and burn it, that's public opposition. All right. Another lesson that I learned from reading a whole bunch of briefs, both sides, the DOEs and Nevadas. If you're going to get into legal battles, you better hire really good attorneys. And those of you who've read those briefs know what I mean. Final comment is, many years ago, Peter Sandman wrote an article addressing how to work with communities in New Jersey to cite toxic waste facilities. The title of his article, his lesson, was Getting to Maybe.